Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Sign up to our loyalty programme and reap the rewards at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Now, Irish woman Aoife O'Brien's name has become a byword for safety and respect on the sets of our favourite TV shows, from Normal People to Bad Sisters. Her pioneering work as an intimacy coordinator has changed the way the entertainment industry sees and treats actors and how we ourselves view sex on screen. She's now written a book called Intimacy, which is an in-depth and informative look at how her work can transfer into our very own lives. Aoife, you're very, very welcome to the show.
Hello, Dervla. It's an absolute delight to be here.
Listen, first of all, you might just explain to us, for those who may not know, what actually is an intimacy coordinator?
An intimacy coordinator is a practitioner that brings a professional process and procedures when engaging with theatre, TV or film in the intimate content, giving a professional structure so that everybody can engage creatively with open communication, transparency, agreement and consent, clear choreography and closure, so that we can create the best intimate content that serves the storytelling, serves the director's vision, allows the actors to be listened to personally, and then means that they can professionally bring the best of their skills as the actor to this character storytelling.
You were something of a pioneer, really, Aoife, in this area. Why did you feel that this work was necessary on film sets? What was driving you to work in this area?
Well, actually, it was a completely organic journey. I actually had written a piece about I put on a play about my own part of my own story. And then I was taking that further and actually inspired by the Forgiveness Project. You know, my mum's from Cookstown, County Tyrone. We would come to the farm every summer, and that journey, as the trouble started and the presence of the soldiers was very prevalent. So I was inspired by the Forgiveness Project and that aspect of bringing together the perpetrators and the victim. So I was then doing a devised piece of work exploring that in 2014 and into 2015. But I was aware, how do I hold a really safe rehearsal process, allowing my actors to be present in themselves, with each other and in the space, in order to explore challenging intimate content? And that was my focus. And at that time, I was speaking to one of my colleagues, Meredith Dufton, who's the head of movement at Mount View. And she was saying, I have to note all these plays with intimate content. There is no professional structure with which to explore this professionally. And you are creating a structure that is actually allowing us to engage with this kind of content in a professional way. So it's actually 10 years ago this summer term that I started teaching this work, you know, and then we would interrogate it and then explore further. So each year then I would feedback and hone and develop the work better. So by 2017, it was the students who were saying to me, this is wonderful now here in drama school. What is happening in the industry? So I started taking the intimacy on set guidelines that had by then I'd pulled together into the structure of the intimacy on set guidelines. But it was absolutely the tipping point of the Me Too and Time's Up movement that meant that the industry then suddenly was ready to listen. You know, they, within the intention to work with respect to, you know, acknowledging that they turned a blind eye, that they're then ready to say, or I was able to say within their intention, here's how we now work openly, professionally with the intimate content.
Because at one level, Aoife, it kind of makes sense, because if you have actors that have to dance on screen, you bring in a choreographer. If they have to fight on screen, you wouldn't just let them at it and kind of navigate it for themselves. So the intimacy coordinator, I suppose, is trying to help assist with those very, very intimate scenes. But as you say, it really, really did collide with, I suppose, the response to the Me Too controversy, and in particular, the allegations against the now jailed producer, Hollywood producer, or Harvey Weinstein. So there seemed to be, a natural kind of coming together of the two.
That's right. And my awareness is that, you know, it was very clear if someone does a fight and is going to get physically injured, or someone does a dance and they're going to get physically injured, that has to be mitigated against. And therefore, producers would put in place best practice to make sure that safety was put in place, but also teaching really good techniques and bringing in those practitioners, be it a choreographer or a fight director or a stunt coordinator, in order to support the production, you know, for everybody to work creatively, respectfully, teaching skills so that there was safety put in place to create either the best dance or the best fight. Yeah. The thing is, with intimate content, that the injury can be physical, but actually fundamentally That's right. It's emotional and psychological. And that was the tipping point. That injury wasn't actually considered something that had to be mitigated against. And it wasn't until, as you said, the producers realizing that this actually is an injury that they need to take care about. And the subsequent, you know, actually convictions, it was so important because it's acknowledging that the emotional and psychological injury is equally something that you have to take care of. And actually, so, you know, and I sort of help people to recognize in the industry that, you know, whenever anybody says, oh, it felt awkward, it felt harassing, to feeling downright abusive, all of those feelings, what they're saying is actually an injury. They're being asked to overstep their own boundaries in a way that's not suitable for them personally. And so therefore, it means actually that they can't bring the best of themselves professionally. And that was a huge tipping point. But the other aspect is that people were just also embarrassed when there wasn't a professional structure within which they could engage openly and creatively with the intimate content to talk about the intimate content. So it became the elephant in the room. So there were so many people, directors, producers, who didn't have any intention of working without good practice. But in that void before the intimacy on set guidelines, you know, I would have directors say to me before, I felt if I really spoke openly about the intimate content, I would be the one that was considered a bit weird. And then the other aspect is, of course, you know, you need to teach someone how to do a tango because people don't know how to do that. Mm. Of course, you need a practitioner to teach someone how to do sword play because, of course, they don't know how to do that. But, you know, everybody's a sexual being. So do we need someone to teach, you know, the choreography of that? And of course, what that missed out was that this is a body dance. And also this is make believe. These two people don't really love each other. They're pretending, you know, just as two people who are in a fight don't really hate each other. They're pretending. And that's where, again, you know, what I've been so delighted to be able to bring is acknowledging and opening out this is a body dance that needs serving and listening to the director's vision, serving and listening to the actor's inspiration, and then being able to stand up and then taking care of that safety, mitigate, you know, about touch, about what's required, what someone's requirements are about nudity and simulated sexual content. And then once we've listened to all that personally, then we will only work freely and creatively with everywhere that is the performer's freely given yes. And then for us as movement practitioners, bringing skills of choreography, of anatomy, of detail of rhythm, so we really serve the storytelling.
It's really interesting that you describe sex and as a body dance, because your own background is as a dancer. And I was fascinated to find out that when you were younger, you were a dancer on the Benny Hill show, which was this family staple we were all raised on. But when you look back now, I can't believe that was our Saturday night family entertainment that our parents let us watch. Because when you look back at it now, it's viewed through the Me Too lens. There's something a little bit icky about it. But were they more innocent times, or what do you think?
I mean, like, sort of that was in the midst of, you know, that was 1984 that had that. And it was actually my very first experience of working on TV. And we had the most amazing choreographer, Libby Roberts. I did just one episode that was actually set in the 1890s. So we did the most amazing can-can with the most incredible fellow dancers. So it was a really positive experience for me. And yes, and my experience of Benny Hill in particular was a sense of innocence. And as I've said, you know, sort of he was such a, you know, a real sweetie and a real innocence. And also his in-depth exploration of, you know, how he wrote his scripts. As I've said, his next episode was going to be on Carmen, and he would bring in his research in little Sainsbury's plastic bags. And I remember sitting on a table with him, swinging his legs, really sharing his inspiration of all the different aspects that he was researching about Carmen, ready to write his next script. But it was others. It was others within the production that were pushing the sexual stuff. It was others that really wanted to bring in the page three girls doing the running around the garden. And Benny was saying to me, I didn't want that.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating. So, we were chatting to about it just a few weeks ago with Camille Sullivan, who loved the music from that era. Can I ask you, look, I mean, obviously film depicts some of the most graphic and most difficult and horrific things that happen in life. You know, so you have films that are going to be depicting gang rape. You've got films are going to be detecting other scenarios. And you can imagine that actors and actresses in particular might feel very vulnerable or uncomfortable in those scenarios. Has your work sort of helped, as you say, navigate that? Because as well, it's a very intimate act that's in front of an entire crew, as well as the public when they get to see the final show.
That's right. So as I was developing my work, those 2 years of research and development, I was looking, as I say, at the dynamic of the perpetrator and the victim. And so I had all of my actors both exploring when they were the victim. We were looking, particularly in the R&D in 2015, at just the catcalling on the street. And actually all of us were, sort of exploring how it was to receive that catcall, what it did to us. And we all explored that and found a physical score from that. But actually, I realised the most challenging day was the day when we were all exploring when we might have been a perpetrator. And so my understanding is actually you need to take care of the person playing the victim, but you need to take care of the person playing the perpetrator as much, if not more so. And then also that coupled with understanding that my risk assessment, as in, you know, the risk assessment that I'm taking when there is a production with challenging intimate content, and that aspect of taking care, not just physically, but emotionally and psychologically, you know, I then dovetail and I work with an artist wellbeing practitioner. I sourced a lovely lady called Lou Platt in when I was working in 2015, and then I continued working with her so that I can dovetail. And when I'm checking out with my actors, of course, I will check out what I can support, but I'm not a counsellor, I'm not an artist wellbeing practitioner. So I dovetail my work, and that's really important so that we can both take care of what might be activating for anybody personally, and then we can all professionally step into, again, looking, interrogating the scene, looking at what the beats of the scene are, what the storytelling is, why this storytelling is important for this script, and then setting about clear choreography with clear techniques so that everybody feels absolutely anchored and comfortable in the physical frame that we're creating, so that then when you lift that up into stage or in front of the camera, that then they can just bring that dynamic of the perpetrator and the victim and create something that's really honouring the storytelling, but for them to feel safe. And then the last thing to say is, with particularly with challenging intimate content, then it's really, really important that after that journey into performance is that then we have closure, that high five, that honouring yourself for what you've given and stepping away, so that we tell this.
Yeah, it's really interesting, Eita, because some celebrities, such as I'm thinking of Gwyneth Paltrow and Timothy Chalamet, have pushed back against intimacy coordinators. But then you have the other side, where Ewan McGregor and his wife, actually, when they were doing sex scenes together for a TV series, welcomed an intimacy coordinator. And you kind of think, well, gosh, well, that's interesting, because you mightn't have imagined that a husband and wife would need that. But it's interesting sort of how the industry, I suppose, is dealing with it. And I suppose for an Irish audience, the one thing that we're really conscious of in your work, because it really came to public prominence, was Normal People, and how that film broke boundaries with its representation of sex. Why do you think there was such a huge visceral reaction to it?
But I'll get on to Normal People in a moment. I just want to just reflect on what you were saying. Obviously, our work and the skill that I'm teaching with the practitioners who I'm teaching is that we're listening and we're honouring each and every person's requirements. So some people, you know, and we will ask how, you know, this is what we offer and how would you like us to support you? And so it's absolutely, obviously I can't speak to any production that I haven't worked on. I haven't worked with Gwyneth Paltrow or Timothy Chalamet or with Ewan McGregor, but obviously I just want to highlight our work is listening to everybody and then holding in the way that each person needs to be supported, so that by the time everybody comes on set, there's parity, everybody feels listened to and heard, empowered and autonomous, and the support is given in the way that they need. And then the next thing is also to say it's wonderful Ewan McGregor's awareness, because of course that's
Mary Elizabeth Winstead, his wife. Yeah, I think it was A Gentleman in Moscow, that series that they had a coordinator working with them.
That's right, because, and again, as you can hear, we're taking care of who someone is personally, but then those, so even if people are, or even more so, actually, if people are an actual couple, you know, we don't, we're supporting them in not exposing who they are in the beauty of their personal relationship up on screen. We want them to support them in who these characters are and what these characters' energy and physicality is, and then taking that into their intimate content. So in some way, it's even more important, and I say make strong choices that are away from yourself, so you're not then, when you're watching it, feeling vulnerable that actually they've exposed who they are in their beautiful private relationship up on screen in honouring of this
And tell me, because you grew up in Ireland and you've Irish parents, and obviously we've particularly a lot of shame or discomfort sometimes talking about sex. What was it about Normal People, or what it? Why had it such a big resonation?
So first of all, I have to say it was the most wonderful honour and privilege to work with the incredible, the whole cast and crew. And in particular, Lee Abrahamson, Susie Lavelle, the amazing cinematographer, and then Paul and Daisy. And then to go from, okay, it starts with the writing. So Sally Rooney's writing is incredible, isn't it? Yeah. So, you know, what she did in her ability to capture the complexities of modern relationships, her relatable characters and the cultural buzz that she, you know, was able to reflect so wonderfully in her writing. And then her ability to explore the themes of love, friendship and the anxieties of adulthood that resonated so completely out in the world. So it started from there. So, and I was aware of that when I was reading the novel. And that's also what was so brilliant about, or for all of us as we stepped into this, there was already that wave of everybody just consuming this amazing book. And how she wrote about, first of all, just her stream of consciousness and how she writes. But in particular, I was aware. And then how she flowed into the intimacy and how she really opened out who someone was, you know, and how they expose themselves in those intimate scenes. I already knew that they were amazing, and all of us did when we met.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And one of our listeners is a big fan. He said Ita is a barrier-pushing, groundbreaking leader in her chosen field. Fair play, says Shane and Tala. Your book, Intimacy, has a much, much broader appeal. This is not just, it's not about celebrities or even your role as an intimacy coordinator. It is about how all of us can navigate, as you describe, that sort of that body dance of intimacy and sex. And I suppose what really I think distills it come down is to what we know, but perhaps maybe don't always fully understand, that consent is the foundation.
That's right. That's right. And if consent is to be sought, if consent is to be asked, then we have to be in our bodies to be able to give an informed consent. So for me, that's the starting place. And my realization as I was writing the book, and from the work in the industry, is how joyous it was to be able to, as I'm saying, to work openly, creatively, to have this beautiful part of who we are as human beings. And again, I'm really, you know, love the fact that our art reflects humanity back on itself for us to both entertain, but also to consider and explore, you know, the different aspects of our human condition, and being able to open out the intimate content and to be able to have it now as a creative and open and beautiful part of the storytelling that can be honoured and created in a professional way, the shift that has meant, and then therefore the resonance out in the world. And that's where it was one of the things with normal people, and then with sex education, how positive it was. Also Gentleman Jack, the queer female community, saying thank you.
Yeah.
For the first time, we have been listened to and heard. We feel the intimacy that's up on screen is showing us in who we really are. And the same with sex education, the young people going, oh, my God, young people having it as a valuable resource. But so many people then who are parents saying, oh, my goodness, I can now have those open conversations with my children, because it broaches how we can do that. And then obviously normal people, that beautiful showing of that like sexual awakening, that ongoing dialogue through a sexual encounter. All of those templates are so positive out in the world, and I was so delighted to be able to support those and bring the detail of the choreographies that those storytellings were able to be told. But most importantly, it comes from lifting the lid of shame and of secrecy and of it having to be the thing that is just unconscious. It should just happen. And my realization that that's actually something to share in the world, and absolutely from where I've come from, I love, and I'm so proud of my Irish Catholic, upbringing, and the aspects that are that are the root of me, which is also what I'm offering, is connection with the land. My mum comes from the farm in Kildress. With my granny Alice, we would be, and my uncle Pat, running the farm, we'd be out every summer, herding up the cows, helping with the milking, helping with the birthing of the piglets. My granny going out, wringing the neck of a chicken and plucking it between, holding it between her legs and plucking it, and having that connection of land and embodiment and life and love.
Yeah, because there's some really interesting exercises in that, just literally in your book about grounding yourself, you know, feet in the ground. But I'm wondering, see, just on that whole area of sex education, have we fully emerged from that kind of shame or lack of confidence speaking about it? Because a lot of times, you know, the expansion of sex education in the curriculum can meet with resistance from parents and you know, I suppose, school patrons alike. What more do we need to see, you know, in order to empower young people in their personal relationships, you know, especially at a time when, you know, the onslaught they're facing, particularly young boys and girls from the porn industry?
That's right. And that's what I'm really advocating for. And as you might have noticed, the sex education chapter in my book, I'm really passionate about sharing. So as a reading from the book, I believe very passionately in an education system that aims to nurture our children and teenagers. I hope it might help them to become young people who have emotional and verbal skills to make informed decisions about how they are in themselves and in their relationships, and then gives them the language in which they can ask for work for that in a respectful way. And I have the joy of working with the amazing practitioner Siobhan O'Higgins, who's working from Galway University, with the amazing team who have created the Active Consent Programme to bring into schools. They're flipping on its head, the same as the intimacy onset guidelines have done in the industry, to instead of our sex education being about fear and shame and don't get an STD, don't get pregnant, to flipping it to going, our intimacy and who we are and how we inhabit ourselves and our sexuality and our sensuality is a beautiful and positive thing. And to help our young people to understand that, to help them know that in their bodies, and to give them the language and you know, to teach the anatomy of arousal, to teach the anatomy of dysfunction, to teach, you know, sort of what happens in our bodies. And again, as Siobhan O'Higgins says, you know, positive sex education doesn't ruin our children's innocence. It helps them preserve it. And, you know, and Siobhan, and so I really am advocating because that we bring this positive sex education that's integrated throughout, right from our infant school. You know, so starting with helping our young boys and girls to listen to themselves, the same as what I'm advocating about, you know, being embodied, to listen to your impulse, to have language, to be able to share, then therefore from listening to yourself, how do you communicate that? And on that bedrock, then a fundamental respect for yourself, and then consent, you know, asking and then listening and respecting people's consent. And then on that foundation, then we can help our children to then go into their sexual awakening in a really positive way. And for us, for those who are nurturing our young people, again, I'm quoting from my book, be it parents or teachers, the invitation is to educate ourselves in how to speak to them and to be active listeners, so they will see us as a non-judgmental resource. So instead of being pushed in this void of shame and secrecy and therefore turning to places, you know, that perhaps aren't the best place to learn. I always say the adult industry is a wonderful, you know, it's the oldest industry in the world. For those who choose as an adult to have their entertainment, to seek out pornography, great. But when our children are seeking out as young as 9 as their place to explore and learn, that actually is not age appropriate, that is shifting them into seeing things that are way beyond their understanding, but giving them a warped idea of what their sexual awakening might be.
Well, it tells them that sexual violence is the norm. It introduces them to ideas like consensual non-consent and unrealistic body images as well, Ita, that they have to, that they're expected to maintain or aspire to.
That's right. And again, the damage when we don't see ourselves, but when we try and conform to something that's beyond and outside who we are. And again, in the chapter Seeing Ourselves, I talk about the, you know, the serious consequence of women, but men's criticism and negativity around their bodies. It not only affects their mental and physical health and well-being, but also this influences their relationships. So this is from Emily Nagoski, her book Come As You Are. She says, women who feel worse about their bodies have less satisfying, riskier sex with less pleasure, more unwanted consequences and more pain. Yeah, so let's lift the lid on that. Let's help everybody to go, yes, the people, the beautiful people, you know, what's presented to us in our screens is one thing, but actually let's live in our bodies, let's connect with our bodies. And again, quoting from the book, and this is me saying, let's work towards being more comfortable with our bodies, seeing ourselves in all that we are and our beauty, and shifting our approach to healthy living in our bodies. And again, living in our bodies, connecting with the ground, being embodied, and then listening to ourselves, and then being able to think, what do I want within my sexuality, my sensuality, and thinking about that and exploring it, discovering it. So we make it an important part of our everyday lives, and then we can bring what we want, what we desire into the relationships and into our conversations. And into our sexual experiences with our partners.
Yeah, one of our listeners says, Eita, I think there's a huge divide in what men expect in their sex lives as opposed to what women want. And it's interesting because one of the issues you address, Eita, is, you know, about women in particular, and we're getting older, our bodies are changing, how we view ourselves, that can impact your confidence. It could also impact, I suppose, the way that you navigate consent and confidence in your most intimate relationships.
That's right. And again, that's what I'm, you know, sort of like for me as a menopausal woman, you know, sort of that when my body was shifting and changing, and I was thinking, I want somewhere that I can go to that isn't turning to pornography, to explore what's happening in my changing body, what's happening, you know, physiologically wise, and to understand that, and then how that shifts, you know, how my sensuality and sexuality is going to be. And what's been joyous as I've researched this book is finding those answers. And so it is that listening to your body. How are you shifting and changing? And then the next person, again, my book is so steeped in amazing practitioners from Ireland, the amazing couples therapist, Lindsay Blair. So I've worked closely with her, and she has taught myself and my practitioners about the anatomy of arousal, the anatomy of dysfunction, and also lifting the lid on the tropes that are out there, in our TV and film, like kissing and then spontaneous penetration after like 30 seconds of kissing. It can't happen.
It doesn't work like that.
That's right. And the, you know, great amount of people who present, or women who present at the GP, is around vaginal pain. So one of those aspects, the lifting the lid of it, I was really excited and flabbergasted as a mid-50s woman when I was learning the anatomy of arousal, particularly for a woman. I didn't know the detail of that. But education is power, or is empowering you to understand yourself, understand your cycle. As Lindsay Blair said, she had a couple coming to her feeling what they were, you know, asking what they were doing wrong. And she was able to say, you are doing nothing wrong. You know, what you are is normal. It's what you are being sold through our screens that actually is giving you a distorted idea. And actually understanding.
Perhaps this is what the real normal people is all about.
The real normal people. And those things, like perhaps it means as postmenopausal women that we need to bring in lubrication. Perhaps we need to bring in using vibrators. But all of those things, I'm just saying, open it out. Again, keep listening to your wants and desires. Keep lifting your lid of what still works, Pam, what's shifting and changing. And that's really exciting. So we can keep our intimacy into our older years.
Well, it is a conversation that has certainly got generated lots of interest. One of our listeners, Sharon, says, what a fantastic interview. Another says, it's an excellent conversation on sexuality. Worth pointing out that ongoing consent, yes, 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 leads to better experience for both partners. And finally, Eita, I don't know if you're ready to say yes to this one, but Mary says, Eita for president. What a wonderful speaker. And that is from Mary in Kerry. But Eita O'Brien, your book, Intimacy, it's published by Ebrie Press and it's out now. It's a fantastic read. And thank you so much for joining us today. And we'll take a quick break.
Thank you, Devla.
Thank you.
Thank you. God bless.
Email brendan@rte.ie.